This is episode number 113 with senior analytics consultant Michael Colella. Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today, and now let's make the complex simple. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Super Data Science Podcast. Today I've got an interesting episode lined up for you. I literally just got off the phone with Michael Colella, who's a business analytics consultant, and he travels the world. So we were actually right now, as we were talking, he was in Stockholm, Sweden, and he's just getting on a plane to go back to Chicago for Thanksgiving. And yeah, it was a very interesting podcast. And what I really liked about today's session is how driven Michael is to grow in not just his career, but in his life as well. And we talk a lot about that. So if you look at his LinkedIn, you will be just shocked at the amount of courses and amount of certifications that he has done and is currently doing. He is currently a consultant, and he's still at the same time doing his master's. He studied neuroscience, he studied business, he studied finance, he studied analytics, he's doing a master's of analytics right now, and at the same time he studies on Coursera, on Udemy, he does different types of certifications for work and outside of work. A very, very interested, a lifelong learner, like a lot of us listening to this podcast. I'm sure a lot of you guys are also lifelong learners, so we talked quite a bit about that. We also discussed how he integrated his passion for travel in his career. And I found that very interesting and very inspirational as well, that he knew that he was passionate for travel, and he managed to build a career for himself that included that component, which is very, very important that we always do what we love and what we're passionate about. We don't sacrifice our passions for other things. Another interesting thing that came up on the podcast was a break that Michael took during his life. For 3 months, he went away to another country just to reassess his life and what he wants, and to align his future strategy in how he's going to build his career and other things. So a very interesting podcast overall. Can't wait for you to check it out. And without further ado, I bring to you Michael Colella, Senior Business Analytics Consultant. Welcome everybody to the Super Data Science Podcast. Today I've got Michael Colella, a business consultant from all over the world, on the show. Michael, welcome to the show. How are you going today?
Thank you very much, Kirill. I'm doing pretty well. I'm out here in freezing cold Stockholm, Sweden. So it's great to hear from you and be on the podcast.
That's awesome. And it was really cool because, like, when I started this podcast, usually I say hi with video, and I was like, Michael, are you in a hotel right now? And it's funny because I'm also in a hotel. Like, I'm in a hotel in San Diego and you're in a hotel in Stockholm. It's just a funny situation, I think.
Absolutely. I thought it was pretty funny as well.
All right, cool. So your flight got delayed, right? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, so I was supposed to fly home to Chicago for the Thanksgiving holiday in the States yesterday, and there was a massive delay, and we found out the plane was basically non-functional, so 200 people scrambled for hotel rooms, and I was lucky enough to find one near the airport. So.
Wow. Yeah, well, thanks all for waking up at 4 a.m. to jump on the call today.
No problem, a pleasure.
Okay, so what were you doing in Europe, just if it's not a super classified secret?
Well, I'm currently working for a supply chain and logistics consultancy. We build optimization software and advanced planning and scheduling software to solve complex planning puzzles. My current project is working with an aviation client in Stockholm, Sweden. So I came out to the Netherlands for a while, where our home office is, so that way I could easily go back and forth between the client site and completing work with the team. So we had some meetings this week with the client in Stockholm, and, the flight just got canceled. So I'm lucky to still be here on Thanksgiving. So
That's awesome. Oh yeah, it's Thanksgiving, so you're not gonna. Ah, okay. Well, hopefully you'll get back before it's the end of the day on Thanksgiving.
yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna try to surprise my family. They don't know I'm coming back, so.
Awesome. And it's really funny how you're working for an aviation client and at the same time the plane got canceled. It's like an irony
Yeah,
situation.
absolutely.
Yeah,
That
gotcha.
is.
Awesome. Well, that sounds pretty exciting. And tell us a bit more about yourself. Like, you seem to have a very interesting career or very interesting role right now where you're consulting companies. I'm just reading off your LinkedIn in countries such as Netherlands, Sweden, Germany, Italy, Brazil, Canada, Colombia, Uruguay, China, and Spain. That's a huge list of countries. Like, how did you end up in this position?
Ever since college and before, I've really had a strong international focus. So over the last 7 years of my career, I've had the opportunity to work, I guess, across different geographies with diverse teams. So something that I'm really passionate about, even outside of data science, is international travel, languages, and working with people of diverse cultures. I find that very inspiring. So I've had projects and different initiatives in a lot of those countries, and had the pleasure of working with people from those countries on a lot of my project teams. So it's I think it's had a huge impact on my career.
I really respect that. When you're passionate about something, travel and languages and cultures, and then you integrate that into your career. You find ways to make it happen. And this is like your career is a huge testament to that, that if people are passionate about something, they can get it. Where there's a will, there's a way. And it's really cool. So walk us through this. So you studied at the University of Chicago, and what did you study there, and what happened afterwards?
Yeah, so I'm currently a master's student in the Master's of Science and Analytics program at the University of Chicago. So what we really focus on is everything from the mathematics behind different tests and approaches to data science and analytics, to the actual communication side, to also things like deep learning and machine learning, and time series analysis and forecasting. And advanced Python. So, these are all topics I'm quite interested in. I love working on these topics, and really just aim to continue to develop proficiencies with all those different concept areas.
And how did you choose this degree? It sounds very good.
Yeah. So my background started off in medical research, doing neuroscience research, both cognitive and behavioral neuroscience research during undergrad. So, there was a big focus on, analysis in order to present findings. So, from the beginning, I had a background in applied statistics and kind of a researcher, analytical mindset. And I decided that, as my career progressed and I got work in consulting, on the tech side of things with, SQL and Teradata and Microsoft SQL Server, and some different BI tools, that this is really what I like to do. And then I eventually explored quite a few courses on Coursera and Udemy, and then also including the Superset data science set of courses. So really, after taking enough of them, I just decided, you know what, I'm serious enough about this where I would like to get a formal master's degree. Why I don't necessarily see it completely necessary for success in the area. I thought it would help build a solid foundation, and especially going into job interviews, having that as a reference point.
Okay, gotcha. That's a very interesting progression from neuroscience to now deep learning and AI and statistics and things like that. And I also see you did you studied at the Harvard Business School in business analytics and finance and economics. Like, you've done everything, man. This is crazy. You guys, you got to check out Mike's LinkedIn. He's studied for all his life. It's like so many different universities that you've gone to. Is this something like you just do for fun?
I'm constantly learning. I'm a very curious person. The thing that makes me laugh now, as a 29-year-old is looking back, is during undergrad, I wasn't somebody who started and knew exactly what they wanted to do, but I did have a trust in the sense of, I will find that out, and really through trial and error. And for me, it started off with you know, maybe the assumption I would, you know, study medicine or business, you know, coming from the family, but then, you know, studying the human brain, you know, taking, you know, my undergraduate major and minor were in psychology and biological sciences. So that's kind of where I got, you know, the neuroscience flavor to thing and things. And then, you know, as I took more statistics courses and then post-graduation took a lot of learning outside of my 9-to-5, I think it just really boosted my career. And when I saw that value was there for my career, it just inspired me to just keep going with that. So I think eventually I'll pursue maybe a doctorate, but I'm taking it one step at a time.
Gotcha. No, that's really inspiring. But now looking back, because you've studied so many different things and your doesn't look like, you know, life might change in the future, but right now it doesn't look like you're going to be a neuroscientist or a psychiatrist or psychologist. Looking back, do you regret choosing that career path at the very start?
You know, that's a great question. I feel like, you know, I get that question a lot. When I think back, I definitely don't regret it. I mean, it definitely, you know, studying that, psychology and neuroscience, it definitely had a formative impact on the way I think about things. And I think, you know, right now and into the future, my interest is really to build stronger competencies in AI. And that's really where I want to see my career go. And I think psychology has a direct relation to that. I think one of the most complex things that, you know, we as humans try to understand is the human brain. And what I saw with different psychology courses and actually working with patients with various mental or developmental disabilities or disorders is just how complex things can get. So I think there's that component, and then also just the team leadership component. So I'm one of those people that I really do believe that there's a value to a liberal arts education, that's not dead yet. You know, I definitely have a strong mathematics background, but really I think that background in psychology has helped me understand teams and lead teams and really try to focus on the different ways I can motivate teams.
Okay, that's a very apt answer. I and totally agree that deep learning, AI have a lot to do with psychology, and that'll definitely be helpful down the track, especially as these fields evolve. Okay, and so tell us a bit more. Which point through your studies, because you're still pursuing education, it feels like it's a lifelong thing for you, and which is very cool. I think that everybody should be like that. But at which point did you start thinking about building a career, starting a job? How did you get into consultancy? What was your first step in that direction?
So after my first master's in psychology, I took a bit of a break, you could say, to go to Brazil, and I started working volunteering rather to teach English in the favelas, which are the slums, because I really wanted to take that time to think more deeply about what is it exactly I want to do and what is my passion. And I also wanted to make sure that I didn't just, you know, kind of blindly follow a linear trajectory. I wanted to do something interesting that if anything else, I could look back and say, hey, those 3 months were worth it. So for me, really what that time served as is just a time to think deeply. And, you know, did I want to, continue down the more, medical type route? Or did I want to, you know, try to leverage these skills that I, you know, I picked up in the and developed, you know, within the scientific community in business? So when I got back to the States, I decided to definitely go with the kind of the more business flavor. And then obviously, you know, that international experience inspired me to get involved with companies, you know, with those diverse teams, and that offered me the opportunity to travel internationally. So, you know, I figured that consulting would be kind of the reflex as far as, you know, what to get into. I feel like consulting is nice because it respects the diverse backgrounds of individuals. You know, you might be a chemical engineer that wants to go into business, and there's, you know, I'd say generally a home for you within consulting. Of course, there's some core skills to develop there, but I think that's been the natural fit for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. So there's so many things I want to talk about right now, like branching out of what you've already mentioned. But just quickly, so you came back, and did these just job offers just fall on you, or did you have to look for them yourself?
Yeah, no. I would say they definitely didn't fall on me. There was a period during which actually I would say it was a bit difficult to find the right role, and that was probably due to maybe a slight lack of clarity on my end is exactly where I might fit in. But eventually I found that out. So I think that's really where, you know, perseverance came in to say, okay, I'm exploring different opportunities, interviewing for different types of roles. I'm going to find something that fits. Then that further inspired me to continue my education because I thought, hey, you know, that's not only going to make me more marketable, you know, taking classes from a, you know, either a business or a data science a standpoint, but it's going to further develop my skill set and give me an edge on people outside of the 9 to 5. So I'm a firm believer in, you know, whatever you do between 6 and 10, you know, will really determine your future. And that's, those are the first principles I tried to use going forward. And I think it's worked out so far.
And I'm glad you mentioned, touched on that, because I was about to ask, like, was it hard to combine a full-time job and education at the same time? Like, did you have to make sacrifices in order to get through that?
Yeah. The major sacrifice was on sleep. So, definitely, you know, my sleep took a hit, but luckily I'm, you know, able to function pretty well in about 5 hours a night. Mm-hmm. Last 2 weeks, I think I averaged about 3, 3.5, which is not ideal. Yeah, I mean, you know, it just takes a commitment. I think once I found my passion, especially as it relates to, you know, analytics and business and data science, that it was, you know, easier for me because I didn't feel like I was necessarily, you know, sacrificing something in a painful way, but sacrificing something in a way of, hey, this is really what I want to learn more about. This is really what I want to do. So I didn't want to let anything stop me.
That's really cool. Yeah, I think everybody has that time, 6 and 10, and a lot of time we spend it doing the wrong things or not pushing ourselves forward. Like, sometimes you gotta rest and relax, but right. You know, I have friends who just watch TV or, you know, just go to the bar every night or just do nothing. And I think it can be put to good use sometimes. Not doesn't necessarily have to be always. You can't always be like working and studying, but sometimes, occasionally, yeah, it can and probably should. Okay, so a couple of interesting things that you mentioned. So probably the one I want to start with is the whole taking a pause and going to Brazil and teaching English for 3 months. Like, that's such a cool thing. I think so many people, like myself included, would benefit from that. That would give clarity, that would give a time to reconsider things, assess things. Tell us a bit more about that. Like, if somebody has, if you're talking to someone who has never ever taken a pause in their life, and they've always gone like school, uni, maybe, you know, maybe they did a gap year, but that was like more for fun and travel, and then like one job, another job, and so on. How would you help a person like that plan something like what you did for themselves? What are like the things to take into consideration?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's a great question. I think it's really important to take that pause and also to just, you know, expand your comfort zone. So that was a huge reason why I decided to go there, is I didn't, you know, looking forward, you know, I feel like one thing that inspires me is, as I think, you know, I feel like as someone gets older, you know, by default, you know, you have less time, whether that means literally or, yeah, you know, based on different commitments. So for me, I thought, you know, I wanted to at least, if nothing else, take this time to experience something that's maybe non-traditional. And there are definitely organizations people, you know, can reach out to sign up for different types of volunteer activities. So to be honest, at first I was just going to go to Italy and teach English at a camp there. But I had been to Italy a number of times already. My dad has an Italian background. But my thought was, you know what, let me do something completely different and something that makes me feel alive. I didn't speak Portuguese at the time. I had never taken a Portuguese class, and I didn't know anybody in Brazil. But I found an organization through New Zealand that paired me with an in-country volunteer organization, kind of as an intermediary. And I would say, you know, that's something that people should think about, is, hey, do I want to do something different before I, you know, plug back into the matrix? Or do I want to maybe take some time to think about what it is I really want to do? And, you know, at the time, you know, different family members and friends, they thought, wow, this guy's crazy. Like, what? Why is he doing this? But I would say that would probably be the single biggest thing, the single thing that had the biggest impact on my career, as well as my mindset related to my career, and then just my personal development. It's hard to, at the time, see maybe just how big the impact will be, or convey that or articulate that to people, because it's impossible to predict the future with 100% accuracy. But I would say that, you know, just believing in yourself and saying, hey, I know something good's going to come of this, because I'm going to literally will it to happen. And it did. So it's been, you know, it's come up during job interviews, and it's always gotten that extra pause and that additional discussion, as well as, you know, in interpersonal interactions with other people, with friends and new colleagues.
Gotcha. And so you didn't know Portuguese at all when you went there. How did you teach English? How does this work?
Yeah, so there was an in-country organization that connected us to another non-governmental organization in the favelas. So basically what happened was, it definitely adds a layer of complexity. At first we started, you know, teaching a lot of, you know, teenagers as well as little kids. So they have a lot of energy and they're not speaking English. So it kind of forces you, I think it puts that extra pressure on you to at least learn the basics so you can communicate. But there was also a willingness to learn. So we were able to, you know, convey, especially with, at first the help of a translator and then Google Translate, what different words were in Portuguese versus what they were in English. And, you know, the kids seem to be interested because they see all these American movies and, you know, English speaking, I should say, not American, movies and TV shows, and listen to music. So with, you know, in the English language. So they're kind of by default motivated to learn more. And then it was really just, you know, delivering on that. And then, you know, I really believe sometimes the best thing, way to learn things, is to just jump right in the pool and you know, try to swim. That's so, surrounded by Portuguese all day, every day. I mean, there were some people that spoke English, but I would say it was less common at the time. This is just before the World Cup. You know, it really forced me to learn more. And quickly, when I got there, I was even like dreaming in Portuguese. So it's just, I felt like constantly stimulated. And for me, just because I'm pretty hyperactive, that kept me interested. And and eventually, you know, and I knew Italian and Spanish. So for me, it was just a matter of listening a little bit more closely and then seeing the words in Portuguese and then just changing the sounds. I mean, no doubt a lot of the words are very different from Spanish or Italian, but I initially picked it up by ear. And then when I got back to the States, I took some formal classes.
Gotcha. And so, but for someone who doesn't know any other languages apart from English, do you think in 3 months they can pick up Portuguese to a good enough level?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think, you know, coming from the full immersion perspective, that's the best way and the quickest way to learn. I think a lot of people, they start with taking classes, you know, maybe they go once or twice a week and have some homework in their home country, which I think is good to lay a foundation. But, you know, complement to that, you could definitely actually go visit the countries or try to live there on a short term or vacation there on a short term and, you know, immerse yourself in the language, or do what I did and just go kind of, you know, blindly and then try to scale up from zero very quickly. So I definitely think it's possible, and it's worth a shot.
That's so cool. That's a really inspirational thing. I'm just gonna ask one more question in this, because it's so new to me and like very, very interesting area. So when you go overseas like that, do you still check your phone, check your emails and so on, or you just cut everything out completely in order to focus on whatever you're contemplating for those 3 months?
Yeah, I would definitely say there were periods of being completely disconnected that were very liberating in Brazil. At that time, it wasn't as easy as it is now to, you know, have a certain cellular provider, and they provide, you know, I'll keep them unnamed, but you know, they provide connectivity in 144 countries, etc. It was more of a thing where, hey, I need to get an in-country phone and kind of more as a pay-as-you-go. So that was actually, it was a wonderful experience at times to be completely disconnected and fully present with the people I was with. I felt like it forced me to learn a lot more about them and focus on that you know, truly human experience instead of constantly being distracted by notifications. And actually that was one of the hardest things to adjust to coming back to the States was, you know, now people expect me to be connected all the time. You get used to it again, but it was just a brilliant experience.
Fantastic. Okay, well, thanks a lot for that excursion into the world of going and exploring yourself and understanding what you want. And let's get back to your career. So once you came back, you're in consulting. Tell us a bit more about what is exactly it is that you do. Of course, without disclosing any sensitive information or practices, but just out of curiosity, like what does a consultant in analytics do that you travel the world and what kind of projects do you work on?
Yeah, so in my current role, it really involves, you know, working on different projects within supply chain and logistics globally. And for me, you know, I've always been in my career and marketed and felt comfortable being somewhere in between, you know, what I would view as the traditional software developer and someone completely on the business side. And that I think that spot right in the middle is really what analytics is today, because there's the obviously the technical proficiencies and the comfort with coding and reading code and interpreting different types of analyses, but also the business or strategy or, you know, communication side. So, you know, being right in the middle is where I've functioned, you know, on different teams over the last 3 to 5 years. And that's kept me, you know, super interested and varied up my day and my schedule a bit. So that's been great. Currently, the organization I'm working for, you know, we'll be working with companies not only from the aviation standpoint to maybe optimize their workforce planning, you know, aligning with, you know, flight information systems, which, as I saw firsthand, flights can get canceled. And then also, you know, working with ports and container terminals, manufacturing processes. So analytics and computer science is definitely, you know, applicable in these areas because, you know, all of these companies globally are just trying to, you know, they use the word, digitization or digitalization. I'm not quite sure if some of these terms are words, but they've become, you know, officially, but they've become buzzwords or industry terms where, hey, they have these set of processes and not only are they trying to optimize them, but they're trying to get planning out of, you know, Excel or more manual planning. So that's really the value that we, you know, we add currently is we, you know, we help solve these advanced planning and scheduling and supply chain puzzles from a technology perspective. Prior to that, a different company I worked at, the teams were quite diverse and we had, you know, overseas teams, but I was, the client I was at was in downtown Chicago. So it was a major healthcare company. And even within that, you know, there's a lot of different tools we use from, you know, SQL to Teradata to concepts like working with Data Lake or Hadoop. But also, you know, it's quite interesting to be able to formulate the proper message to the business stakeholders, internal team that might be a bit more technical. So I was really used to bridge that gap. And, you know, it's been the right fit.
Mm, okay. That's a really interesting description. I'm very curious. Can you give us an example of a supply chain puzzle, as you said, just a hypothetical? Doesn't have to be a real project that you're working on or have worked on, but a hypothetical example of a supply chain puzzle that a consulting firm like yours would address.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll resist the impulse to generally talk about the current engagement I'm on. While I do think it's quite interesting, but to take care there. But okay, so for example, let's say you know, a major canal in the world or a container terminal. You know, you've got these massive ships coming all over the world, whether they're from Singapore or Shanghai or the port of Rotterdam or somewhere in Australia or South America. To different locations. And so they're, you know, they have their own onboard computer systems and they also have a variety of and scheduling, but they have a variety in their cargo. So they might be carrying, you know, hazardous materials. They might be carrying perishable materials. They might be carrying, you know, more traditional consumer product goods. And all of these containers, so they're all stacked on top of each other. So it gets pretty complex because you're basically dealing with a 3D puzzle where you need to be able to identify when this, you know, this vessel comes into port to berth, which is like one of the terms that we use. It's just when the ship is, you know, basically aligning with the dock and getting ready to be unloaded. You need to know where these different containers are and where these containers are going. So one big ship that maybe comes into the port of Rotterdam, it might have, you know, a few hundred or a few thousand containers, and these containers all have to be accounted for. They have, you know, like I said, different goods. So they're located in different types of goods. So they're located in different areas of the ship, but also they all have their own end destination, or maybe groups of them have their own end destination. So the puzzle lies in, you know, being able to unload the ship in the correct order, or the most efficient or optimal order, in order to make sure that these containers get to their, you know, final destination, but even just their intermediary destination. So trucks are coming into ports to pick these containers up. There are forklifts, there are automated cranes that will go and try to unload the ship based on data that was received on where, you know, said container is located. And then on top of that, there are all these complex labor rules and regulations. So these ports might run 24 hours a day, you know, 365 days a year, to, you know, make sure everybody gets the food and the products they need. So, you know, you have to factor in all these unique constraints, as we call them, within countries and different areas of the world, from, like I said, the labor rules and regulations to union rules and regulations to, you know, which include, like, you know, different rest periods that are required, and, you know, different different breaks, as well as, you know, the length of their shift. So these software optimization solutions, they have to account for all these different variables, from the actual labor rules and regulations to, you know, the planning at the ports or container terminals to unload these vessels, which involve, you know, a number of different components, to actually consider the information of the vessels, you know, what's on the ship, and where is it going, and what is the timing for that ship, how quickly does it need to be unloaded, et cetera. So there are just so many more layers to the puzzle than even I initially thought coming into the role, but it's been great to learn a lot more about supply chain and logistics, and, you know, how, you know, analytics and computer science have a role.
That's crazy. Like, I can't even imagine how massive the software would be and how long it would take to create it in order for it to correctly account for all these different details that comprise this whole operation. Like, well, from your experience, how long does it take to create a piece of software for solving a puzzle like that?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely takes a while. It depends. So these puzzles, they have these sub puzzles. You know, they might specifically bring us on to optimize the workforce, or they might specifically bring us on to, you know, optimize the stockyard planning for, you know, what's going on for unloading or loading the vessel. So, you know, the length of a project, or you know, how long it takes to build a solution, really varies. Are we building the whole thing, which would probably take a couple of years at least, or are we building, you know, a scope of work, building for a scope of work that's just a subcomponent, which I would say at that point will take anywhere from, you know, I would say half a year to maybe slightly over a year. So it really depends how complex the puzzle is, but those would probably be the general ranges that I would feel comfortable with.
Okay. Yeah. Very, very interesting. All right. So that's a very, very interesting line of work, and it's very different to what we're normally used to in data science, like R and Python programming and things like that. So can you tell us a bit about the tools that you use in order to accomplish these objectives?
Yeah, absolutely. So the current organization that I work for, we partner with a specific software provider called actually Quintic. So they're owned by Dassault Systèmes. I can't speak French, but which, you know, Dassault Systèmes, or DS, they have a lot of, you know, common engineering tools or programs that are used. specifically the Quintic software. You know, it solves advanced planning and scheduling puzzles across really all sides of supply chain planning and logistics. And then, you know, we have some in-house tools that we've developed for rail cargo optimization. And those are the actual software platforms. And then within that, you know, we interface or we can connect to really any systems. So there are definitely SQL components involved. So, you know, you could be talking about Microsoft SQL Server. And then, you know, a lot of the clients that we work with, there, you know, are specific BI tools they use. Of course, you know, the super common one is always trying to get their planning out of Excel. But really, we just take pride in being able to, interface with any systems that they might have, as well as file formats, whether they're, you know, XML or HTML or JSON. So it's really a variety of, you know, systems and integrations that we work with. But at the same time, you know, the actual software that we develop, like I said, it really comes from Quintic. So they have, you know, the world record on solving a lot of different puzzles. So it's really a puzzling software that's quite nice. And then, like I said, we have some in-house solutions for, some subsets of tasks within supply chain and logistics, mostly in the rail cargo space. But there are some other popular softwares like Ames. I know BCG, they use Ames and some other tools.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so when you say you develop software for them, that basically what I gathered is that you don't like sit down and code something in C# from scratch or in Java. You actually already have these programs, platforms in which you kind of just more. It's already higher. It's a more high level tool where you need to. You don't need to encode all the mechanics of the tool itself. You just need to encode the problem of the client. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's a very true statement. You know, it's the language that's used for this software platform is it's called Quill. So I've heard it described in different ways, but I've almost commonly heard it's some sort of mix between Java and C#. It is object oriented, but so we'll basically encode, like you said, the actual puzzle or the solution to the puzzle, or some combination of the two. And there's the whole software development lifecycle of gathering requirements to writing technical documents that can be followed for the development processes, and then also writing the functional or more business type of documentation. And then it's really beautiful when the whole solution comes together. Definitely, it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of listening. That's pretty much what we do to build a solution.
Okay. And how long did it take you to get the grasp around how to do that?
Yeah, I would say the whole training process, it takes at least for the first level of certification, maybe about, I would say, 3 months, given, looping that in with other work that you're doing. You know, like many things, I think there's kind of a natural progression of learning how to use different tools and interact with them and, derive value from the data with them. So our formal certification process is, to go through with our software partner to speak to our proficiencies. And then that's something that the clients look at, certifications. They serve to, provide trust with the clients you're interacting with. So the first level, 3 months, and then, it gets progressively harder. There's more work involved to get, the higher levels of certification. But that happens through time and actual project experience as well.
Okay, yeah, gotcha. And so out of the soft skills that you use on the jobs, which are obviously very important because you need to get that information before you can go and do the technical side of things, what would you say is the most important soft skill?
Yeah, I would definitely say listening. There is our standard industry solutions to a lot of these planning puzzles in my current role, but that require customization. And that customization piece, I think, is key. So that's where that listening skill comes in. And then being able to communicate that not only back to the client so that they're confident that you understood them, but communicate that to your team, which is diverse team of, people who studied econometrics to traditional developers to people on the business side. So it's always interesting, communicating with, people on your team with different mindsets, experience, and backgrounds. But also, like I said, being able to listen to the client is super important, that requirements gathering, so that way, you know, the analytics that are conducted can be done in the right way and really serve a business purpose beyond just being an interesting problem to solve.
Yeah, okay. That's a very interesting description, and I totally agree that you kind of need both, right? You need to be technical and you need to be able to speak to people in order to get that information that you need, or convey the information back to those who you're dealing with. What I wanted to talk about next is, you mentioned certifications, that you need a certification that takes 3 months to get that, and then the next one is harder and harder. But like what I see on your LinkedIn is that you've done a lot of extra certifications. You've done like close to 10 or maybe even a dozen courses on just Coursera alone. Obviously, that's in addition to your studies and addition to your work. What keeps you going? What keeps you motivated to do more courses on Coursera?
I would say just, you know, looking at even just data science and analytics jobs descriptions, as well as consulting positions related to that. These days, there's just such a, like a, you know, to put it in a funny way, I guess, like a word vomit of requirements. So, you know, yeah. They list everything. And I've seen in practice that it is true that they're going to list, you know, their Christmas list. But you don't necessarily need to know how to do every single one of those. But, you know, understanding the data structures has been key. So I think that translates that translates to all these different, you know, certifications, is, you know, the approach I've taken is, hey, I understand the data structures related to this already, or I need to take these courses to have an increased level of comfort with data structures in a certain way. So these courses, again, really came out of looking at different job descriptions, but then also, you know, I think that foundation in data structures is important, because then you can go in and learn these different tools a lot more easily, because you're understanding, okay, well, this is, you know, what's maybe standard or I'm used to, and I just need to tweak that thinking a little bit to use this tool, and this is how this tool will respond, or this language or this platform will respond to, you know, this slight tweak. And so, I think that's really what it's been for me. And then also just, I'm just super curious. I feel like the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's been a very humbling experience for me. So I think it's this idea of kind of the quote unquote open sourcing of education and knowledge is just changing the world, because now people that normally wouldn't have access to these classes, you know, normally you go to a university, you have to pay $5,000 for these classes. You know, you can go take them for relatively nothing or you know, much cheaper price point online, and then still build the same skills. I think it's just incredible.
Okay, that's very true. But at the same time, do you ever feel oversaturated? Do you ever feel that you're learning things, new things, but you're forgetting things that you learned before? Not like immediately before, but, you know, you took 5 courses, now you're taking a 6th one, and you're forgetting what you learned in the first one. How do you go about that? Because I feel that with this availability of education, a lot of people are afraid to go and learn more and more stuff, because they kind of know that if you're not using some knowledge, and in your case, you know, you're even going out of your way to learn things that are probably not directly related to your role right now. How do you go about retaining that information? And is that something that scares you off from learning more?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a significant part of the learning process. And I think, yeah, over time, you know, certain things get filtered out. But having, you know, at least that comfort that can say, hey, I've worked up the tool, I understand the tool, that if I need to come back to it, that you know, ramp up process or that relearning process to get the cobwebs off is a lot quicker. But yeah, to your point, I think it really comes down to, you know, what you're using on a daily basis is really what you're going to, you know, likely be the best at. And I think on that same note, it's that's really about going deep on things and collecting, you know, different proficiencies and certifications. I've tried to keep in mind that while that might serve its purpose, it's also important to spend enough time with one tool to really go deep on it. And That's something that has motivated me, especially with Python and R, two things that I think, regardless of the role and the specific software tools you're using, you can apply those to any role and really any setting. So one of my big mentors, he's a lead launch engineer at Google. He's got about 10 years on me, and he's a traditional computer scientist, and that's something that he shared with me, and it worked for him, at least from a role perspective. And I've tried to really keep that in mind, to go deep on topics, not just take one or two courses, but like with Python, I think I've taken 6 or 7, and then trying to use that on passion projects outside of class or work. And that's really how I think you get good at it, whether it's a Kaggle competition or, a project with friends or other students or colleagues on some interesting problem.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great answer. Going deep will help you understand the tool much better and retain that knowledge for longer. All right, so I've got a bit of a list of rapid-fire questions for you. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so what has been the biggest challenge for you ever as in this analytics role, or in not this specific role, in this analytics career?
Yeah, I would say, kind of piggybacking off of our last conversation, is just the amount that you have to learn. But I think it's been twofold for me. It's inspired me to spend more time with topics, and also it's definitely a factor that I think maybe scares a lot of people, but I think there's a natural progression to that learning, and it's also a constant, challenge in the right way. It's like, hey, I don't know how this works, but I'm going to figure it out. And I think for me, that tooling around is just very inspiring for me. And I think it's, data science and analytics is definitely a place for people who are naturally curious and they want to keep learning and they like challenges. They're not, comfortable just sitting still.
Great answer. Love it. What's the next one? What's a recent win that you can share with us that you've had in your role? Something that you're proud of?
I would say just building trust with the client. There's a lot of companies out there these days with different software platforms that develop in different languages. And I think, translating analytics into practice and building trust with the client, saying, hey, based on the questions you ask and the requirements you gather and how you communicate, that's really the difference sometimes, given everything else equal. I think, people are, by just pure market pressure, they're being forced or called upon to learn, a specific set of skills or tools or software, development languages, but that trust has been the difference. Yeah. I'm really proud of that with the current engagement. I think that they have a strong trust in us. So that's huge.
That's awesome. What would your best tip be for building trust?
I would say, listening is key, and then asking the right questions, because when you've taken your time before a meeting or an engagement to really prepare and understand the puzzle or the complexities or intricacies of, the potential work or the work of that specific client, that'll come out in your questions. And I think that's one thing that other people notice. How deeply did you think about the problem at hand? Because, these are experts you're dealing with that often know a lot more detail related to a topic than we do as the consultants, at least initially. But then we come in and we become the experts at showing them, how to translate their puzzle into an actual, or their problem into a solution. But that initial set of questioning and listening, I think that's really how you build the trust. And then it's wonderful when you sit there and it clicks with them, and they say at the end of a meeting, man, I really feel that you guys can do this.
Well, okay, that's a good tip. And what would you do, or what would you suggest if somebody's like in a engagement as a consultant, or even in their own company, and they're dealing with a person or talking with a person who just has this bias and resists this whole idea that analytics needs to be involved, that they have to be, somebody has to be helping them sort this problem out, like that they think they know better and stuff like that. So like in such problem cases, what would your approach be? Because this is still your client, or in your workplace, this is still your the person that you're trying to help, that you need to help in this project, what would your advice be there?
That's a great question, because I feel like that comes up so often, and regardless of the company I've been at over the last, 5 to 7 years, there's always some sort of resistance to change, and that's definitely probably the most difficult thing to break through at clients, especially when you're coming in as a consultant. And I think, sometimes there are certain, they might have an industry that, for consultants are coming in, but practically, I would say showing the value. So almost, giving a demo of sorts, whether it's, some certain analysis in R or Python or some other language, or if you have a software demo for a related planning puzzle, that speaks volumes, because what you can do with the client in that regard is give a certain planning scenario that they might have, during their day or their 9 to 5, and kind of have them work toward a certain success metric manually, or as they currently do, which might be manually or semi-manually, but then showing them the power of the solution or the analytics or the tool and how it can add value and make their life easier. Once you show them that you can make their life easier, I think that value, it really just transcends any sort of biases or walls they might have up. And that's how I've seen success getting in with the client, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, because who doesn't want their life to be easier? Like their work, not life, like their work to be easier. Everybody wants that. So I think, you're onto something there. Show them how you can make their life. What's in it for them? That's, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. What is your one most favorite thing about being in the space of analytics?
I would just say the constant challenge, and that goes hand in hand with all the different methods and tools that are out there. I think the pace of evolution of the field of analytics and data science is just it's so fast already, and it's just speeding up. Whether we're talking about machine learning or deep learning or AI, that there's just so much out there that it's humbling, but it's also so exciting. It's so exciting to be it feels like you're on the front of the curve of, the normal distribution of the world. You're, that part of that group or cohort of individuals that's an early adopter. So for me, I'm a big believer in quote unquote moonshots. So for me, being on the forefront of something brand new is really what's most exciting.
Amazing. Yeah, I totally agree. It's just crazy how things are developing so quickly, especially in the world of AI. You never know what's going to happen in the next, not even 5 years, the next year, you don't know what's going to come out. And it's always a surprise when it does.
Absolutely.
All right. Now I got a philosophical one to kind of like wrap things up. I love asking this question because people in different positions have different perspectives and based on their experience. From what you've seen in the space of analytics and data science and AI, deep learning, where do you think this whole space is going, and what should our listeners prepare for to be ready what's coming in the future?
Well, a couple of things. I think, not only are, I think, a lot of initiatives being set up to not only have a better impact on the environment, but make our lives easier, as we talked about. But I think it's going to get, in many ways, a lot easier to get involved. I think a lot of companies and, in different organizations in the tech space are working to make things easier. Like, for example, with certain machine learning, tools or methods, where I've seen even now, which is quite interesting, some drag and drop type of functionality. But I don't see that importance on understanding the science or the coding behind it going away, especially from a statistical analysis perspective. But I think it's going to get a little bit easier for more people to get involved. And then I think once they do get involved, maybe that initial anxiety about learning a software language or learning how to code or learning the math behind a process will go, subside a bit, because they can say, hey, I know kind of what the end result is, and I know how to do this. Now I'm just going a level deeper. And that can come over time. Mm.
I like that idea, and especially like for some people it might not be necessary to go that deep, right? It will help some people who want to and who will eventually, but it will also enable people who don't really need that level of depth and that level of huge level of functionality, but they might benefit from, you know, a little bit of extra machine learning in their life, like maybe, I don't know, some mom and dad bakery down the road who have no intention of learning R and Python ever in their lives, but if they have that drag and drop tool, even if they get some basic segmentation out of it, you know, some k-means clustering or KNN classification, even if they can, if that enables them to run those algorithms just to better service their customers and optimize their products and whatever else they are doing, that can be a great step forward. So I'm pretty excited that you mentioned this. It does sound like an exciting future, not just for people in data science analytics, but for everybody in the world in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. That rounds it up for us. Where can our listeners contact you or follow you to see how, you know, what are the next things you learn? Which countries you're going to visit, and how your career is going to progress from here?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the best way is just to contact me via LinkedIn. You know, my last name's a little bit hard to spell, Collella, but you can find me there, and I'm sure my last name will be in the show notes as well. But yeah, LinkedIn is the best. I'm also on Twitter, so I'm trying to you know, build more of a social media presence, but I can be found on Twitter as well.
Awesome. Okay, great. That will definitely be in the show notes. So guys, hit up Michael on LinkedIn and follow him on Twitter. And one last question for you today. What is a book that you can recommend to our listeners for to help them become better at what they do?
Well, I would say, you know, again, the technical proficiencies are important, but there's a book that's been extremely helpful for me. It's called 60 Seconds and You're Hired by Robin, and it really focuses on the communication aspect of you know, business or interacting with clients, or just, you know, getting a job in data science and analytics. I think that's a way to show beyond all of the different technical tools that you might have, or languages you might know, or methods that you might know, showing your future employer or the people you're interacting with can be comfortable that you can actually talk about what you're doing. So, you know, that I'm just thinking by default, you know, when you're giving a presentation or a data visualization, having that ability to communicate in literally 60 seconds or less the value, I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. I haven't read that book myself, but I think that would even be beneficial for people who are in the space of entrepreneurship or figuring out ways to use data science to like help other companies as consultants, or they need investors, because 60 seconds can be an interview thing, but it also could be an elevator pitch, and maybe that could be useful there. So yeah, thanks for the suggestion. The book's called 60 Seconds and You're Hired by Robin. All right, Michael, thank you again so much for coming on the show and spending some time here with us today. Really appreciate all the insights and the amazing story. Hope you have a lot more consulting fun engagements in the coming future.
Thank you so much, Grill. It was a real pleasure.
So there you have it. That was Michael Collella, and I hope you picked up some very powerful insights from this conversation. Personally, I got two main takeaways. I usually mention just one, but this time I think it's important to mention both. That both of the takeaways is because I feel they're important. So there was lots of things that I took away from this, but the two main ones. Big takeaway number one, that Michael was passionate about travel, and he knew that he was passionate about travel, and he managed to incorporate that into his career. Not just managed, he set out to find a career that incorporated travel in itself as a major component of the work. And I find that very admirable, that he didn't let go of his passion, he didn't sacrifice his, he didn't trade it over off for or traded in for a big paycheck or just interesting work, which, you know, like sometimes you might think that, oh, if I want to do interesting work, I can't do what I'm passionate about. But that's not true. As you can see from Michael's example, he managed to incorporate that, his passion, into his work. He found, or he built himself a career where he travels and he does analytics and he does data science. So that's a big takeaway number one. And by the way, from the previous podcast, in the previous podcast where we were talking with Eric, he managed to do the same thing. He is passionate about education and he incorporated education into his career. So there you go. Those are two examples, and it just stands to show that whatever you're passionate about, whether it's helping other people, saving the planet, helping animals, nature, physics research, whatever it is, there is a way to incorporate it into your career as a data scientist. So that's number one. And takeaway number two is that I really liked how he described how he took a pause to go to Brazil and teach English to children there for 3 months, and how that was intentional to help him realign in his own life, understand what he wants from his career and what he wants from his future, what he wants for himself. Because a lot of the time in life, we get caught up in the moment, get caught up in all this minutia of life and all these things happening around us. Like Michael said, he put it very aptly, as soon as he got back, people expected him to be, and now expect him to be online. We have lots of expectations that we have to conform, that these expectations are of other people. And we forget, we sometimes don't even know what we want ourselves. And I think it's very important to know what we want. And if what it takes is to go to Brazil for 3 months and disconnect and just find yourself there, then that needs to be done. So I really respect Michael for having the courage to do that and for actually going through with it. I think that a lot of people in this world could really benefit from that and have a much happier, more fulfilled lives if they truly knew what they want from their own lives. And so I personally think I'm going to take that advice on board, and you know, hopefully one day I'll be able to it's all up to all of us, you know. I'm already making excuses, but one day I'm going to do something similar and disconnect. And maybe, you know, maybe it's just something that needs to be done regularly. Maybe every couple of years you need to go away and just find yourself. So that was a very cool excurse into a part of his life. So there we go. That was Michael Colella. You can get the show notes for this episode at www.superdatascience.com/113. There you'll find the transcript for the episode and all of the materials that we mentioned. And plus you'll get the URL for Michael's LinkedIn and his Twitter. So make sure to hit him up and connect on LinkedIn and follow him on Twitter. Help a fellow data scientist build out his social presence. As he said, he's building out his social presence on Twitter. Let's help him out. Yep, and on that note, hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Can't wait to see you back here next time. We're slowly getting close to the end of the year. Only a couple weeks left to go. And I look forward to seeing you back here. And until next time, happy analyzing.